Jerry Bader Show, 9:35. Got about 10 minutes here, so if you have a question for Congressman Reid Ribble, now is the time. 406-1360, 888-455-1360, to Shay in Green Bay. Shay, you're on with Congressman Reid Ribble.
Hey, Congressman. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning, Shay.
Hey, I have a question that is important to a whole lot of people here in Green Bay. It's about the floodplain insurance issue, because I've been talking to a lot of people around here, and, you know, we're dealing with working-class people who are being charged, you know, upwards of $1,000 a year by the federal government, directly by the federal government, and there seems to be no relief for them. I know you guys did pass something, I think it was late last year, to temporarily halt the raising rates on that, which is, I applaud you and the rest of Congress that did that. But, I mean, what do we have that we can bring sanity to this system long term? I mean, FEMA has already promised they're skyrocketing those rates.
Yeah, there's
anything in mind to help people deal with that? We got working class people losing their homes because they can't afford the flood insurance.
Yeah, there's actually a couple things happening. One could make it a whole lot worse, and another thing might help it a little bit. The EPA is trying to expand what the floodplain in this country looks like and make it even larger, which would create just a catastrophe for Northeast Wisconsin. And so I have written legislation that has really good bipartisan support to basically rein in how the EPA manages water, particularly small rivers, creeks, streams, and things like that are not subject to flooding. And then trying to have some level of balance where we recognize the differences between floodplains along oceanfront and along lakefront, because they are dramatically different in this country. And it's a classic play of the federal government to try to create a one-size-fits-all under the argument of fairness. But there's a pretty good chance that wherever your house is in the Green Bay area, you're not going to get hit with a hurricane. I'm reasonably convinced of that.
Probably.
but yet the federal government wants to treat your insurance policy and your flood policy and coverage exactly the same as somebody who's in Mobile, Alabama, or along the coast of South Carolina. And it's patently unfair to the upper Midwest and other regions of the country to place an inordinate burden on you when you don't face the exact same kind of risk. And so I know that Jeb Hensarling and others in the House are trying to craft policy that is more regionalized as opposed to nationalized on this issue. And so stay tuned. We'll keep working on it.
All right, Shay, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Jim, hard at work in a frac sand mine in Wisconsin, has a question for Congressman Ribble. Jim, go ahead.
Good morning, Reid. Say, Governor Walker about a week ago brought up a subject about our gas taxes, and, you know, we need to find other ways to get some funding for our highways. And I believe a gas tax really needs a change, because all these coal-powered cars, we're building highways with very expensive spandex lanes. And everybody gets use out of the highways by getting their products delivered and stuff. So I agree with the governor on that.
Okay, I think he's talking about the state gas tax, it sounds like.
Well, yes, but you just mentioned, that the federal, we had to extend our funding for the federal highways too.
Yeah, I mean, we have to face up to the fact that if we're going to have the world's greatest infrastructure system, and that would include roads, bridges, airports, seaports, if we're going to move goods and services around the country, freight rail and passenger rail and things like that, that we can't make a determination that says to our children, hey, you're going to have to pay for our roads and bridges and your roads and bridges. So I've been kind of opposed to a funding mechanism that is built solely on bonding or borrowing, because it can really trap the future. And so the simplest thing is to take a look at the gas tax. I've been encouraging governors, because governors will often come into Congress and say, we need you to raise a federal gas tax. That's code for we don't have the courage to raise our own gas tax and tell people the truth about what we have to pay for. But there are some other alternatives that we're looking at as well. One would be repatriation of federal tax dollars. There's about $2 trillion sitting on the sidelines overseas that companies have paid taxes on in those countries, France, Germany, all parts of Asia and around the world, if they repatriate that money to the United States, they have to pay their 35% here as well. If we would move to a territorial tax system to allow people to repatriate and then say we're just gonna tax that money at 5% and put it into the Highway Trust Fund, you can change the paradigm very, very quickly. And so I'm open to a lot of different ideas, possibly taxing at the refinery, getting in front of the pump. But what I'm personally not in favor of is ignoring the problem. We're going to have to deal. The gas tax has not gone up since 1993. We're trying to fund a 21st century infrastructure system with a 20th century operating model.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. Robert Wild Rose has an ominous topic, EPA regulations. Robert, you're on with Congressman Rebel.
Sure. I get a magazine from Adams Columbia Co-op, and that provides our electricity.
Yeah.
Which is coal-powered, and apparently about 70% of the electricity in Wisconsin is produced by coal power plants.
It's a lot. It's higher than 60%, but it's somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, their commitment and mine also is the cost. If the EPA, you know, just puts in some real strict regulations, and I understand right now it's at 34% decreasing carbon emissions, whatever. But to achieve those targets, they're going to have to close down a significant number of coal plants.
That's correct.
And the cost of this, as President Obama has said, will skyrocket cost to us. So what's your take on this, and what can we do about it?
Yeah. The current state of play, is, and the president's been very vocal on this issue, and in fact, he's got a lot of Democrat senators in coal-producing states that are panic-stricken about his posture on this. And this one issue, just this issue on coal, is likely to flip the U.S. Senate in the fall. And that's when we can really begin to make a play on this, because the president's going to have to respond to the American voter. But here we have a place where the single biggest global competitive advantage we have is reliable and inexpensive electrical power. And so what is the left's approach to that is to raise the cost of our greatest competitive advantage, to actually reduce global competitiveness and to raise the cost of power all throughout the country. It's a nonsensical approach to take. And today's modern coal-fired plants are extraordinarily clean. They're not as clean as natural gas, but they're very, very close to it. And terrific strides have been made by the industry all on their own. And they would continue to do it without these ridiculous approaches to carbon that the president has been taking and that the EPA has been taking. We've been trying to reduce EPA's funding and restrict their implementation of this through the appropriations process, but we have not gotten much progress because of the Democrat-led Senate.
Robert, thanks a lot for the call. In fact, State Senator Tom Tiffany addressed this very issue in an op-ed piece in the Wausau paper this weekend, and really, you just covered everything. I don't have to read Tom's piece now, because Reed just covered everything. We have one final question. John on the road, stimulus and infrastructure. John, go ahead. You're on with the congressman.
Yes. Of the $800+ billion, how much of that was earmarked in the stimulus for infrastructure, and how much was used?
Yeah, well, only about 8% of it was actually used for infrastructure. What the president found out was that the bureaucratic red tape was so extreme that they couldn't quickly move stimulus dollars to infrastructure. What he found out is shovel-ready doesn't exist in this country. 3 years ago, when we passed the new highway bill, and we did get the president to sign it, we were able to cut red tape by 50%, which saved 5 to 7 years in construction time. And so that helped a lot, but not much of the stimulus got to infrastructure at all.
And let me just follow up as the final question. I know we're out of time here. And now the president himself is bludgeoning Republicans, saying you don't want to spend money in infrastructure. My response to that is, why didn't you do it the first time?
Well, exactly right, because he found out he couldn't. And why doesn't he work with us to actually streamline it further?
And I promise, this is the last question. I read a piece a while back that it's really not even so much the money, but again, the environmental rules and things that are the real roadblock to a lot of these infrastructure improvements.
I got about 90 pages of streamlining legislation in that I wrote into the last highway reauthorization bill, and we cut construction time in half by doing it. It was a big fight, but we got it through, and the Senate approved it, so I was pretty proud of that.
All right, that was a fast 45 minutes to say, yeah, really, well, we need you a full hour next time.
Okay, full
obviously.
Hour. Jerry, full hour next time.
Absolutely. Congressman Reed Ribble, thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
All right, I got to plow through a lot of stuff in the next hour and 15 minutes, but we'll do it. It's 9:46.
For all things Jerry Bader, jerrybadershow.com.